This is JS Party, your weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. Check us out on the web at jsparty.fm. There you'll find our recommended episodes, listener favorites, and a request form so you can let us know what you want to hear about on the pod.
That's a great idea. I'm glad I had it.
Thanks to our partners for helping us bring you world-class developer pods each and every week. Fastly.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. Okay, hey, it's party time, y'all.
Hello everyone, it's me, your host, Amal Hussain. You're listening to JS Party, a weekly celebration of JavaScript and the web. And I'll have to remind everyone this week that JavaScript extends to the server and washing machines and beyond. JavaScript runs everywhere. And I'll share some more context for why I'm saying this in a minute. Okay, this is a bonus add-on because I realized after we finished recording this podcast that I forgot to tell you why I was trolling on JavaScript being beyond just web browsers. So this week, the State of JavaScript launch, which is like the annual survey, and unfortunately this is the second year in a row where they've left out JavaScript server runtimes. And as somebody who loves Node.js, it's very disappointing. You know, people who write server-side JavaScript essentially support all the modern infrastructure and tooling that we all use every day. And so to kind of isolate and leave that community out of the State of JavaScript survey just seems ridiculous, right? So where would modern JavaScript be without things like Node.js or any other, or Node.js? Just kidding. But no, seriously. So that was what I was upset about. So now you all have the backstory and hopefully we'll fix this problem for next year. But now you know. But with me today is Nick Nisi. Hello, Nick. Welcome.
Hoi, hoi. JavaScript runs in me.
Yeah.
But it's typed.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my God. You know what? We had to go there.
Of course.
You know, Nick, if you manage to get through a whole show with me without bringing up the word type, I don't even care if it's in the word, like, forget TypeScript, just the word type. Just if you can manage to avoid that, like, I will give you a million future equity dollars.
Have I already failed for this episode? Or
you failed hard. You failed hard. You failed so hard, my friend.
Next time.
Yeah. But hope you're doing well, Nick. Did you have a good Thanksgiving turkey day?
I did. We had a lot of fun. And then over the weekend, took my kids to Monster Trucks and they loved it.
Oh, that's so fun. That's awesome. That stuff is so much more fun, like, than people even realized, you know. Smashing things is fun.
For sure.
Watch, yeah. Especially when you're not doing the smashing, right? You just get to cheer it on from the sidelines, you know.
Yes.
Like an angry mob.
I don't have to pick that up.
Right, exactly. But anyway, so we're so excited about our guest today. She's a really cool person all around. Welcome, Laura Kalbag. Hello.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and we're so excited to have you. We're going to learn about you, learn about what you're doing these days. We're going to learn about this cool project that you're involved with. But first, let's talk about our origin story, Laura. You and I met at NodeConf a few weeks ago, which is also where the town that the conference was in, Kilkenny, is where you live as well, right? Kilkenny, Ireland.
It is. I was a very last minute addition, by the way. Love that you say origin story. Makes us sound like superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
So I wasn't originally going to speak at NodeConf. And then I found out like a bunch of cool people that I'd met at other conferences were going to be there. And I kept saying, oh, you'll be in Kilkenny. You should come hang out with me while you're there. Not even thinking I was going to go. And then last minute, I think they had a speaker that wasn't able to make it. And they were like, oh, Laura, you're local. Would you come give us a talk? And so with about a week to go, I was like, right, got to get me a nice demo together and come give a talk about Stately and Stately related things at NodeConf. And it was good fun. And we got to meet there.
Yeah, we did. And you know, I mean, I hope the speaker who wasn't able to make it is doing okay. But, you know, their absence is my win because I got to meet you. I got to meet your wonderful partner. If you're listening to this, hi, Aral. So good to meet you. And then first of all, I just want to take a minute to acknowledge how incredible that conference was. It was my first time attending NodeConf for you. And holy moly, y'all, like
best conference I have ever been to, hands down. Like, hands down. Was that your first time going as well, Laura?
It was my first time going. I'd never been, even though I live literally 5-minute drive away, I'd never been to the hotel that it was in, which is really the fanciest hotel I've ever been to in Ireland. It's like this really nice spa hotel with these beautiful grounds. They have like falcons and things like that, like flying around. They do.
It was otherworldly.
Like a school for it. It's bizarre, but a really like well set up day, curated talks or days, 3 days, loads of great content, really nice people, good food, and loads of fun stuff to do in the evenings as well.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And I think for me, what I loved was, you know, as a senior person, like the talks were really geared towards advanced content, essentially. There was like, I didn't feel like any talk was like really very beginner. It was like intermediate or advanced. And even the advanced talks, like, all had an intermediate slant. So, you know, maybe there's a couple slides where they lose you, but really, like, for the most part, you know, like, it was just fantastic. So I would say, everyone, please put this on your calendars for next year. Just a fantastic conference, community run, community oriented, really great setup. It's like kind of not in the middle of nowhere, but it's outside of Dublin. So you have to really want to be there to get there. And so you get like 300 people that are just like really excited to be there and excited about Node. And they're stuck in the same venue and hotel for like 3 days. And the venue and hotel is just amazing. The food is amazing. The best part I think I liked about the conference was, you know, it started off with talks in the morning and then you have lunch. And then after lunch, it's like workshops, you know, which I think is so much more productive than like sitting in talks for 8 hours a day. Because usually after lunch, like, I'm done. Like, I don't, like, want to listen to talks, so.
Yeah, you totally burn out on sitting and listening. You want to start doing stuff and joining in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so Nick, no FOMO, but, like, you definitely missed out. And you should submit a talk next year.
Yeah.
That doesn't include the word type in it, you know.
We got to get like a Pee Wee Herman, like, you said the magic word.
Exactly. Exactly. So Laura, now that you've given us that awesome origin story, let's dig into why we invited you here, which is to talk about XState and Stately. For those who aren't familiar, XState is a open source, free and open source state management and orchestration solution for JavaScript and TypeScript apps. Essentially, it brings the power of state machines into the world of web application development. And Stately is a new SaaS platform that has launched to kind of supercharge that experience. So before we kind of get into all that goodness, Laura, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my origin story, I guess, is similar to quite a few people, but I guess not the same as a lot of people working in tech, in that I'm originally a designer. I went to art school. I know a lot of us don't study like computer science to start out, particularly those of us that have been in the industry a while, because the right courses weren't really around when we were starting out. But yeah, so I started out studying design and I wanted to make websites. I love the web. I love the idea of being able to publish everywhere. I love the idea that people could learn anything from the web. It was really, as long as you could afford an internet connection, then you had so much of the world at your fingertips. And I wanted to work in that medium. And so once I started designing for it, I was like, well, I need to actually know how to build the stuff I'm designing. And so slowly but surely, I started teaching myself how to do dev. And when I left uni, I was like, right, I'm going to get a job doing this, and started working for myself straight out the gate. Maybe a little bit naive, but it worked for me for a long time. And I ended up, I think I ran my own thing, or a combination of things by myself and with other people, for about 12 years before I joined Stately became a sort of a more employed person.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's so cool. And then you have this book that I own. It's somewhere in the shelf behind me in my messy shelf. I actually own that book. I love A Book Apart. I love all the books that they publish. Folks who aren't familiar, you want just like a little tech book that like just kind of, it's like no fluff, just stuff, you know, great for busy individuals. You know, it's not like 300 pages, but it's like, you know, 75, 80 pages, 100 pages of like really good material. And yeah, your book's one of them. So I didn't even realize that like you were the person that I met at the conference until I reached out to you to do this podcast. And I was like, wait a second, hold on. That's that accessibility person? Like, that's the person who I, you know. But yeah, can you tell us a bit about that life?
Yeah, so it was really exciting. A Book Apart approached me not long after they started up. And what was really nice is I was a massive fan of their books already. I knew a bunch of people who've written them. The fact that they let people write in their own voice is really cool. So they're not dry textbooks. They are like, they have humor and they have like personal voice. I mean, I say personal voice. My book is in US English, and you might be able to tell my accent is very British. So that was a little bit jarring, like taking all the U's out of the word colour and things like that. But it is very much like it sounded like me, although I did have a very good editor that made me sound like a better version of me.
Yeah.
And so I'd been writing about accessibility on my blog and in other places for a while. It's always been an issue that I really care about because I have a brother who's disabled. I know a lot of disabled people. And it just, since I started out, it always made sense to me that I make this accessible. Of course I do. I want everyone to be able to use the things that I build. And so when I was asked to write a book, it was a little bit scary, but I was like, I can't pass up on this opportunity. And it took me a few years. That's unusual process. A Book Apart are wonderful people to work with because I had a lot of life going on at the same time. But yeah. Once we got it out there, I think it was 2017 it came out. So it's a long time ago now. But the benefit of accessibility is that the field moves quite slowly and things improve even slower. So pretty much everything in that book is still completely relevant today. Very rare for a tech book.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess I consider it just kind of one of those foundational things, right? It's like accessibility is like kind of, it's like this horizontal layer in developing web applications or mobile applications. And so I feel like the fundamentals are pretty baked, right? It's like this is the way to do it. Like there may be better ways to do certain things in the future, but for the most part, like if you're following accessibility guidelines from 5 years ago, like you're still in good shape.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, totally. Like those basics have stayed the same. And it's, I guess in some ways it's the same with developing anything for the web in general. Like
correct.
The basics and the fundamentals, even though we put new libraries and frameworks and all sorts on top of it, those fundamentals have stayed the same.
Yeah, no, totally. And so, and speaking of foundations and fundamentals, I feel like we've invited you here to talk about the world's most nerdy topic, which is like state machines, and also the world's most hotly contested topic, which is state machines. I wouldn't even say state machines. State machines is like an avenue for doing state management. Really, I would say that state management is the hotly contested topic, right?
Indeed.
And really at this point, like everyone should just be using XState. I mean, let's be real. But anyways.
I do.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so we're gonna talk about that and explore all of that with you today. So I guess we've had David Piano on the show, and he's definitely due to come back. We're excited to hopefully have him back again in 2024. So we talked to David when he was a Microsoft employee, and he had this fun little open source project called XState. And I think if you're a JS Party listener, that's kind of where we left off that discussion. Fast forward to 2023, there's this company called Stately, which has people working for it, like yourself. And I'm just like, David, like, whoa, what's going on? First of all, like, I'm tremendously excited because XState is like one of my favorite projects on the web, period. And then
Yay. You
have, yeah, I mean, come on. It's like, it's just the best. I mean, it's like solving a solved problem in a way that makes sense for JavaScript applications. You know what I mean? As in like, this is not, I mean, we're using like fundamentals from computer science, like from the 50s, you know, it's not like, yeah. It's not just like Joe Schmo invented some like new way to do a new thing. Right.
Yeah.
And so I that's the part that I love about it the most. But for folks who may not be familiar with XState or state management, well, I would say state management might be a stretch. For folks who might not be familiar with state machines or XState or Stately, can you just talk us through all that stuff and tell us about how you also became involved with the project?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, David Khurshid, also known as David Piano to people that see him on social media.
I know. Oh yeah, that's so funny. I call him David Piano.
Most people know him as David Piano.
I know that's not his real name though. I think that's what counts, David.
He's an incredible pianist. So if you do ever get the opportunity to see him play piano, that is why he is called David Piano. But yeah, so he made the library extant, and it's been around quite a long time now. It's really popular. It's for using state machines anywhere that JavaScript runs. So I guess it's mostly used on the web, but it can be used in cars, in TVs, in all sorts of things we've discovered is where it's used. It is used all over the place. So it's really cool. And what that does is it basically uses this old school principle of finite state machines, which is basically you can model what your states are, what the events that trigger transitioning from state to state. So you can model that, and you can also model actions that are triggered, like your side effects when you go into a state or exit a state, or when you hit a transition as well. But what it also does is it layers on this other cool, like, I guess it's called a visual extension, I guess, called state charts. And state charts add a whole more greater amount of complexity than you can manage with just state machines. And so what that does is it adds things like hierarchy. So you can have parent states and child states, and you can have parallel states, which allows you to have concurrency. So if you have like different states happening simultaneously, it can, you can also invoke actors as well. So you can, if you are want to go even nerdier than state machines, we could talk about the actor model, which is the idea that everything is an actor and can send events to each other that trigger each other's behaviors. And so you can invoke actors from your state machines. Your state machine can be an actor. And so there's cool things that you can enable with state charts. And that sounds really, really overcomplicated. But actually, what it ends up being, if you're trying to read your state machine inside of your JavaScript, it's essentially a JavaScript object. It's actually really readable as code. And then you can do a lot of different stuff with that, with what's provided in the library itself. And so I think it was a couple of years ago during COVID, I was looking around for something to work on. And I was like, oh, I can do various things because I have a design background, but I also enjoy doing development. I write a bit, I speak a bit. I love free and open source, and I love community work. And I was like, does anyone have a job that they want to give me to work in this area? Very unprofessional way of getting into the employment bubble.
I don't know. That sounds like a woman who knows what she wants and went after it. Like, you know, it's like, take me as I am, you know? I love it. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah. And David was like, well, I've got this team that I'm starting up around Xstate. It's going to be called Stately. And we want to do state machines as a service. So the really cool thing that Stately does, and initially it was this Xstate visualizer. So that allows you to visualize your state machines as you've written them in the code and inspect them as well. And the benefit of having Stately is that you can actually build state machines visually using a drag and drop interface. So suddenly this opens up the world of state machines to folks who may not be familiar with them, who just want to look at something that's like a flow diagram of app logic. And it also is a much quicker way to be able to build things. And once you can visualize them, you can also simulate your machines. So you can see exactly how they would work inside your app as live. So you can go, oh, when I'm in this state, what events are available to me? And that makes it really easy to spot things like unreachable states or transitions you don't want to happen, or where you've just completely missed out a transition that you need in your app logic. So it just makes it a lot easier to understand. And then we've made it so you can export that to your code. And soon we'll have ways you can sync that to your code as well. And oh, there's a whole bunch of really cool features that we've put in there recently, but maybe we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. I'm gonna let Nick take the lead on this. Nick's like salivating, you know, he's like biggest fanboy.
Yeah. When we had David on the show way back, Xstate was something that I was really interested in. And like, I saw a lot of people talking about it on Twitter and things like that. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty interesting. And then this opportunity came up at work. So I talked to David about it on the show and, you know, was interested in it and really wanted to learn more. But then at work, you know, we were going through this whole like revamp of like the most complicated piece of our application to like handle all of these different types of states. And I was in all of these meetings where they're just drawing everything with Miro. And I was just like, you know, if you're in this, you go here. Otherwise, you go here. And I'm just like, this looks like a state chart. I really think that we could just do this in a state chart and then export it.
And have it be interactable.
Exactly.
Yeah. And shareable. And that was like, that was the thing I blew my mind when I first started using it. I was like a principal software engineer at the time, and we're building a bunch of new greenfield things. And, you know, just creating a little chart and then being able to just generate a like hosted version of that state machine and then mm-hmm. being able to share it with my product manager and designers, like, That was so clutch. Like, you know, yeah. Game changing.
That's one of the things that really appealed to me when David asked me if I wanted to join, was because it's the idea that I'm come from a design background and do development. So it always really intensely frustrated me that we were continually treating all of our like different areas of expertise as completely separate. We had our requirements in different formats. We provided feedback to each other in different formats. We're always like chucking stuff over the wall at each other. And mm-hmm. there's really very few ways you can have a source of truth that stays live and updated and right. is accessible to everyone. Like, you might have a source of truth in a design system somewhere that a few people understand. You might have a source of truth in, I don't know, your Figma files. You might have a source of truth in your code, but getting all of those to work together is really difficult. And so this is what really appealed to me about state machines is, oh, well, we've got the visual version, and even if you edit it visually, it's still going to output decent code. Not like your standard like no code situation where you're building a lovely website with all these drag and drop blocks and then it outputs a load of inaccessible yeah. junk. Yeah. Like, it's actually doing useful stuff.
Yeah.
Which is because of the explicitness of state machines allows you to be able to do that.
Mm. Yeah. It always feels like they're spitting out blindfolded HTML and JavaScript and CSS, right? Because it's like somebody yeah. like typing blindfolded on a keyboard, just like slapping their hands. Like, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Like, those like build outputs are for like Flutter and all these other different kind of like web target things. But yeah. So Nick, let's go back to your story. So we interrupted you.
Yeah.
So,
I just approached everyone and I'm like, you know, this really looks like state charts. And I think that we could do this in a way where we can actually like build the logic into this diagram basically, and then come back and actually watch the diagram go and make sure that it works. And so I was given a week to do like a quick spike with it, just to put something together. And I used Xdate with Storybook, and you know, didn't do any UI except for using Storybook to literally just show that state chart visualizer in there with some buttons to control, you know, now we're in this state, move to this next state, and you know, do all of that. And after a week, I had all of the business logic done, and we could walk through, you know, the entire flow of the app and what we needed it to do with none of the UI. So then we could just go back and hook in the UI. And like the way that we broke it up is like one state machine to rule them all. And then like each individual like section had its own. So there was like five like smaller state machines that it would just invoke when it gets to that state.
Nice.
And it made it really easy. Instead of just, you know, 1,000-line state chart, it was very manageable. And then we just got to go plug the UI into it. And I have some thoughts around that part of it. But it was overall very successful and is still in production today. And
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much
yeah.
looking forward to version 5.
That's amazing. First of all, like, I'm excited to click into that problem that you just highlighted, Nick. Like, that you're like, okay, now getting it to work with my existing UI libs, mm-hmm. Like, is a different situation. Because I would agree with that. But I feel like it's because it's like you're from Venus and you're talking to someone from Mars. You know what I mean? Like, but I, and in this case, let's say that Venus is more advanced than Mars. You know, like, but that being said, just like the whole state machine inception is another thing that I was really excited about. Like, I love that you could create like these little, here's a state machine for this, here's a state machine for this. And then you can kind of have this like bigger state machine that like controls these little ones, and it's just so clean. And I think the big win for me as an engineer first using Xdate was like, you know, it just allows for really clean decoupling of the development process, right? So step one, discovery. step two, design. Step three, development. Like, that's like the idealized state, right? But like, you and I both know the reality is like discovery, design, development are like all like all in bed together. And like, you know, like someone broke up with someone, someone now is dating someone else, so they're back together again. It's like a K-drama, you know, developing and shipping software. You know, but I do feel like having that state machine, it just allows for all the stakeholders to come together at the table when they're developing a new feature or requirement. And just like, how is this thing supposed to work? Okay, what are the error states? Okay, what happens when we hit this edge case scenario? Okay, you know, and you can even leave room for edge cases and come back to them later when you've, you know, when you're ready to tackle them. Like, mm-hmm. And so it just gives this like centralized getting everyone on the same table. Like, I've never worked so collaboratively in my life with like non-technical stakeholders than I have with when I'm using tools like XState. So I cannot say that enough. Like, it's like, when I say like I love this thing, I really do. I think Nick loves it more, but I'm right there with him, right after him, you know? Just, yeah, we're big fans.
Yeah, definitely. I have lots to say about XState and things like that, but I am curious. Like, it seems like Stately and the Stately.
We have more love letters for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a Changelog Newsbreak. E11D creator and former Netlify employee Zach Leatherman writes about the tension and future of Jamstack. Quote, "Some stakeholders and detractors have declared the Jamstack dead, in part evidenced by the recent shuttering of the Jamstack Discord, the discontinuation of Jamstack Conf as Netlify pivots toward the marketing term composable and a new conference under that name, and the end of the Jamstack Community Survey," end quote. Netlify coined the term, but it seems pretty clear that they are done with it. Where does that leave everyone else who is keen on building websites stacked with Jam? Zach thinks a post-Netlify Jamstack opens up opportunities to refocus the definition and strengthen the community with a broader group of leaders and stakeholders. "I agree that a refocus is necessary. The term had been loosened to the point of meaning, I don't know what.
What the French call a certain, I don't know what."
If you agree with Zach and want to partake in the future of this once thriving, but perhaps propped up by ZERP-enabled marketing dollars community, join them by filling out the survey on thefutureofjamstack.org. You just heard one of our five top stories from Monday's Changelog News. Subscribe to the podcast to get all of the week's top stories and pop your email address in at changelog.com/news to also receive our free companion email with even more developer news worth your attention. Once again, that's changelog.com/news.
I wanted to ask about Stately, though, specifically, because it seems like it's grown beyond XState. Is that a correct way to look at it?
Yeah, so the idea is that, I mean, right now, the best thing to use it with is XState, but you could use it by itself. You can use it to model whatever you want, really, anything that is flow-like. And we're trying to also help bring in other members of the team by not necessarily always using the word state machine, because that's going to scare a bunch of people off. But if you talk about it in terms of flows, and states and events are a pretty universal and easy concept to understand. But if you start talking about flows and things like that, then people can comfortably use it to model. One of our long-time users is actually a project manager who uses it to model a whole load of things and then passes it on to his team. And I love that. It's really great for it to be accessible to people who want to use it in that way. But we've also recently released some features so that you can actually import from Redux and from Zustand. So getting your reducers and your stores in so that you can then translate them into something that is more state machine-like as well,
nice.
Which is a pretty cool feature to help people. Because it is sometimes one of the complaints that we often get about XState itself, and to some degree Stately, is that it's hard to get started or to know where to start, and it is quite a big learning curve. And a big part of my work at Stately has been trying to reduce that learning curve as much as possible, whether it's through making goofy state machines based on dog walks and things like that, and trying to make these concepts easy to understand, but also just trying to make it easier for people to get into a state machine. And once they can see it in action, they can start to understand how it relates back to their work.
Mm. Yeah. That's one thing that we really ran into as well, is like, it's solving our really complex problems very well, X-State is specifically, but then we're still using things like React's built-in state things like use state, and looking at things like Zustand and things like that for simpler cases where a state machine almost felt like a little bit overkill.
I there's no such thing in my opinion. And then this is why I wanted to bring up earlier, like the first time I heard about the actor model, and by the way, Laura, like great description earlier explaining that concept. It's like a hard concept to explain. And hopefully we can dig into it a bit more later. But the first time I heard that, I thought of this Shakespeare quote that was like, there are no small parts, only small actors. You know,
I like that.
So I think it's okay. I think it's okay for there to be a small state machine. Like, I think that's the point. Like, I think it can be one node, 100 nodes, 4,000 nodes. But the point is, like, all the relationships between the nodes make sense and they're intentional, you know, and you don't have to worry about like one way flow or this way flow. It's just, what's your logic? And here it is visually, you know, represented in a way that like is going to be consistently reproducible, like, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Well, you can also mix state machine logic with non-state machine logic as well. So that's what's quite useful about it. So if you do have something that is like really simple and linear and you aren't worrying about multiple states, you're not even really worrying about many events or anything like that, then you can probably keep that really small and basic and then... But then use that to communicate with a state machine and use the state machine to sort of send it events and things like that so that you can modularize it in different ways. And that's what I always say is, yeah, state machines, you don't want to see it as the like the hammer to every single nail. If you start thinking that way about any technology, then it gets dangerous. And because you're thinking shiny and exciting. I mean, I'm not sure how many people say that state machines are shiny and exciting, but still, yeah. you're overusing it. If you're over evangelizing to that degree, then you know you can't trust someone. If they are saying that what they're building is a solution to everything, you can't trust it. So
join my cult.
But the second you have started getting the complexity, and really like with state, the smallest like addition of a feature can introduce so much complexity in state. Mm. And so that's where having state machines is really valuable, and also where visualizing them is really useful, because a lot of the time you can be staring at like a bunch of code and it's hard to kind of grok what's going on there and what all the implications are. And that's one of the nice things I find about being able to visualize state machines is the idea that you can get a completely different perspective on how something's working.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's dig into kind of some of the gaps that Nick highlighted around, okay, I now have this great, perfect state machine. I've like perfectly represented my business logic. Now I got to go plug it into my actual productionized web application that has, you know, legacy code and this, that, and the other thing, you know, 17 flavors of Redux, like, right? Like, and by the way, it's also worth noting, like, there is like, I love Redux, just putting it out there, like, and the kind of PubSub event-based model. Like, I think these things play nicely together, but I think I'd love to hear from you as well. Like, is there a world where these two things can live side by side in a large scale application? Or do you really have to kind of be intentional about like what's responsible for what, you know? So two big questions, Laura.
Well, I'd be curious to know what Nick's experience of this is, because honestly, in the application that I have the most experience using state machines in is of course Stately Studio, which is full on into the state machines. We have, I think at last count, 51 state machines used in the code for the Stately Studio app.
Nice. So ours is a React application, which I think caused some of our initial confusion potentially, because like the way we design the state machine, like technically lives outside of React. Like we're not developing it in a React hook or something like that to where it has access to other React hooks. And that's important because like a lot of our existing like business logic and like the way that we fetch things from APIs and all of that is with React Query. And so all of that kind of exists over there. And we kind of went down a path for a while where we were like, oh, we should just like, you know, a fetch is a promise and a promise is a state machine. So we could just do that as part of the state machine flow. But then that's like duplicating a lot of things outside of there where we also need them in React. And so the other way is like we could just do like, you know, do it in React and then send a message to the state machine that here's the data and then it can run with that there. And kind of the main problem I think that we ran into with that was just like in the initial like POC, we had this perfect enclosed state machine that had all of like the steps that we could take within this application. But then as we start adding in these UI bits and the React chunks to it that are actually like fetching the data and putting it in there, the lines got convoluted to where state might exist or originate from. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I think that really kind of caused a lot of like tight coupling between the UI that we had or that we were creating and the state machines. Whereas like in the initial thing, my initial vision for it was like, we can just have this perfect state machine that is totally decoupled from the UI. And then the UI can just be this dumb UI that gets fed data from the state machine and displays it and sends it messages. And the lines really got blurred on that.
Yeah. And I think utilizing more of that kind of actor model way of thinking about things is a really great way of doing that decoupling. And that is, I think, as you mentioned earlier, being excited for XState version 5, which is being released this week, by the way.
Oh, wow. We caught you at a good time.
Caught it just in time. So then, yeah, so it's a lot more focused on the actor model and also making concepts just generally a bit easier to understand if you're starting fresh with XState as well, using terms that are easier to grok and just making everything a lot straightforward.
That piece specifically, like easier to grok terms, I have been saying since the start of this, like with teammates and stuff, I'm like, oh, you know, that's a little confusing, but it'll be fixed in XState 5. So I'm so excited about this week.
Yeah. So can we talk a little bit more about the actor model, I guess? I have some more questions on like kind of retrofitting this into your app, but like I think maybe it's worth it to kind of just like lay the ground for folks on like, can we dig into the actor model? Like, qu'est-ce que ça? You know?
Yeah, so I mean, at the most basic level, the actor model is breaking things into such small modules that all they are doing are sending events to each other and triggering behavior based on those events. And so you could do it with you can do it with anything, but in state machines, it's your way of breaking your state machines up. So you can choose to invoke an actor. So it's a bit different from if you want to just far and forget action, some sort of effect, it's which you can just far off and forget about it. Whereas with an actor, you can actually invoke something that's a lot more long running, a process, and the state that you invoke it on, it will start in that state. And then when you exit that state, you can stop it. And then in actions, you can use actions to send events to and from your actors as well. So it is more of this decoupling behavior, just trying to break things into the smallest possible pieces that you can in order to make it easy to understand. Yeah. Where your data is flowing and how everything's supposed to behave.
Yeah. So can you give us an example of like what's coming in version 5 that's like, that's going to make something more turnkey, right? Like what's like the before after snapshot for?
Well, for one, just using the term actor, because that's something that is missing in version 4. A lot of the language used around it has been services. And also one of the most common things you would use to kick off your state machine is using create machine. And now you can do that with create actor as well. So it's really enforcing people that when you are creating a state machine, you are creating an actor and encouraging that way of thinking about what you're building from the beginning.
That makes sense. And so getting back to kind of like the Redux thing, right? So like hearing you describe actors like has helped me solidify my own understanding of actors as well. So thank you. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of thinking of, well, PubSub, right? And, you know, the kind of lovely scalability that like Redux-y, Flux-y tools bring into front-end applications, where, you know, oh, you want this similar behavior triggered, like, oh, you want this button click to do this, to do the same thing on this other page, like, you know, 3 lines of code, or depending on which version of Redux you're using, 100 lines of code, but it doesn't matter. Point being, it should be pretty easy. Hopefully you're just copy-pasting.
Yeah.
but I'm just curious, like, where do these, yeah.
So you can do that same kind of thing with a state machine. What you can do is you can just send an event to your state machine and that will allow you to get into whatever the next state is. It will be able to pick up that event. And so that's the easiest way to start interacting with your state machines is you can just even do it on like click handlers and things like that. You can just send far off an event to that. And then you can read the state off that as well.
Right. Because I think like the beauty of XState is like you can make whatever you want happen when something else happens, right? Like it's pretty cool. Like it just gives you a hook into a series of events. And so I'm just wondering, like, have you seen people kind of through their adoption journeys, like, you know, what do they do with their existing state management tools essentially, right? Like I'm an engineer at X company and I'm like, I'm really interested in XState. This sentence wasn't supposed to rhyme, by the way, but like, you know, and I keep seeing on X, everyone keeps talking about like, you know, stately this, stately that. I want to get on this bandwagon, but like I have this existing state management tool. So like, what do I do? You know,
one of the things I say is you don't need to just pull everything out and replace absolutely everything with the state machine. And you're not going to be popular if you suggest that anyway. I don't think anyone gets away with doing stuff like that in their project. But you could start off by just like using XState for like a really tiny element of state. So even if you're creating a new feature or something like that, if you start using a state machine for that, that's a really good way of just starting to introduce it slowly and seeing how it works and playing with it in a much more contained environment. And it can interact perfectly fine with other ways of managing state as well.
That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I think like once upon a time, React was also something that kind of lent itself to that type of incremental adoption where it was like, oh, you have a Backbone app? Oh, you have an Angular 1x app? No problem. Just like insert this div and like, well, that'll be our root. And then this one piece of your page or this one new page will be in React, right? Like it was that kind of like we can live side by side unopinionated, like, which is fantastic. And it seems like that's obviously what you can do with XState as well. So thanks for shedding.
Well, that's one of the primary goals of XState 2 is that it will always be platform agnostic, framework agnostic. So you can use it anywhere JavaScript runs, and that means there is no preferential treatment. Yet there are like a few helpers that will help you with React, and there are like packages for Vue and Svelte and Solid, but you can still use it anywhere. I mean, to be perfectly honest, my preference is generally using it with vanilla JavaScript because I like to be able to be like, right, how does this work before I start getting any other frameworks involved? Right. And that's how I tend to write things because that's just the world that I come from. I'm an old lady, as many people refer to me, a grandmother in terms of technology.
No, I'm the grandma on this show too. So you're in good company, Laura. Like, but yeah, so shifting into like, so there's XState, the library, which we've kind of obviously covered and talked about. I'm really curious to kind of hear about this evolution of Stately, because like that's where I kind of fall off the cliff, right? Because I haven't been using Stately. I'm familiar with XState, the project, but I'm not familiar with this new as a service world that you all have created. Like it seems fantastical and delightful and amazing. But can you tell us about like, what is it, you know?
Yeah, so Stately allows you to visualize your state machines, but also create them using a drag and drop interface. So it is really easy to get started. And I kind of liken it to like using a whiteboard or like making a sketch when you're starting out a project and you're starting to plan out your app logic. You can just start dragging things around. So you can start sticking some states on there. You can start sticking some events on there. You can be like, oh, actually, I want that event to go to that state. Oh, actually, I want this. And just model and sort of play around with it until you get something that you like. Or because everything has to have AI in it nowadays, if you want to be lazy about it, or not, sorry, lazy is the wrong word I've learned. It's
you want to be efficient.
Yeah.
Efficiency.
You want to be efficient about it. You can also, in Stately, you can give it a text description and it will generate a state machine for you based upon that description. And it's pretty good because the benefit of having something that is strict as state machines, you're giving the AI assistants a lot of guardrails there. So it can really quickly build something that is pretty decent based on your description. And as much as we like to think that we're unique, a lot of the flows we end up building are pretty much the same kind of apps doing the same kind of thing all the time. So it has pretty reliable results. And now we've also made it so that you can... So what we have with simulate mode is the ability to be able to walk through your machine as if it's live. So you can just... You have the visualization in front of you, but it highlights what the state you're currently in and which events you can like go to from there. So that's quite a nice way of just seeing how things work. But you can also export that to CodeSandbox or StackBlitz, and that will enable you to do the same thing, but it will actually generate you a little React app so that you can click through it. And now we've even got this little enhance UI button. So you can actually use it to generate yourself a basic React UI just from your state machine. So you could go from just a text description of, oh, hey, I want to build myself a little onboarding flow. I want to have logins for Apple or Google or Twitter or whatever. I want to have the option for an email sign up and a password. And this is what happens if there's an error. This is what happens if it's successful. Generate it for me, and it will generate you all the buttons that you need, all the handlers that you need, and a little React UI to get you started, which is fun for prototyping, and but you could always use it like to kick your app off if you're building something small as well.
Yeah, I'm curious if that would help with the example that I had when I was doing the prototype of it. And you know, I didn't have any UI. I only had the state chart to look at. Mm-hmm. And it was great, like being able to pass simple messages, but anything that had like, because on the messages you can pass like additional data. And I was like, I was copying and pasting some JSON to be like, okay, and now I'm going to pass this to go make it go to this state. Is there anything with that, like to help in terms of like, I don't know, AI helping you to fulfill, you know, whatever requirement is to go to this state versus that state, or does it generate that in some way?
Yeah. So it can generate all kinds of things, but it will generate you the rough idea of the states and events that you need, but it can also generate actions. So there's a context that you can have, you can build it from Stately itself. So you can just build it from like little text inputs essentially, but it will also build in the actions if you need to update your context and all of that kind of good stuff. Mm-hmm. So it can do a huge amount of building that logic for you, and it's doing better and better results as well. One of the benefits, I guess, is that a lot of these LLMs were trained on massive data sets that included a lot of X-state machines. So you've got a lot of, it knows how to build them well because it's based on what developers have been doing for quite a long time at this point.
That's awesome.
That sounds amazing. And also just like, whoa, mind blown. You know, I've kind of come around pretty drastically on AI, right? Like, you know, I think the first time I saw output from ChatGPT, I was just like, whoa, this is scary. And this is scary kind of like has really slowly, and I say slowly because I think it's really taken me a year to get here. It slowly turned into like, whoa, I'm going to be able to do so much more, you know? And that's because, you know, I use it. Like, I don't use it every day, but I use it like most days for different things. And it's been a level up, you know? I just feel like I have a super assistant and like I can do more with my time. And so, you know, I think for folks who are listening to this and are thinking, oh my God, like, does this mean like my job is going to go away because Stately has created like...
Yes. Amel says yes.
No, it is not. It just means you're going to be able to do more. You're going to be able to spend more of your time on things that you can uniquely do.
Well, and... It's not going to, you still have to give it the instructions. You still have to tell it what you want to build. You still have to know whether it's the right thing. And you'll probably want to make changes and massage it to make it do exactly what you want and exactly what you need, where your use cases vary from common use cases, where things just might need to be called something different.
Yeah.
And I also think that that is one of the things that people don't understand about a lot of AI, and I'm very skeptical about these things. I really worry about us giving so much data and information to these massive, all-powerful corporations, right. Let alone the AI. But the idea is that here you have to give it the instructions and you determine what comes out at the end. You have to know whether it's the right thing. And so really, it's useful if you've got a blank canvas and you're just having to put something down. And that's really valuable in just getting you started. Part of that is when you're writing a text description for something, it's actually forcing you to think about what you need in very clear, basic terms. So really, in that way, it's kind of an aid for your thinking. But also, you have to know whether what it outputs is correct. And
right. You
need to have some level of skill or understanding to be able to do that. So it's certainly not going to replace our jobs, but it will help us get there a bit quicker, particularly with very repetitive tasks, I reckon.
Absolutely. So well said, Laura, really. And I, for one, you know, I'm tremendously excited about seeing all the things that people are going to be able to create. And more specifically, actually, I'm more interested in non-technical creators, you know, like, what is AI going to do? Or what, I guess it's already technically doing it, because I'm seeing people post online. They're like, I don't know how to code, and I just push two apps to the app store. I'm just like, more power to you, you know? Seriously. So I'm excited to see what this does for the creator space, especially like the indie hacker space, right? Because some of the times, like, for independent like engineers trying to be entrepreneurs, like, limiting factor is like, I don't have five other engineers to work with. And so now, is AI going to help like change that? My guess is yes. So very excited to see that.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I like about using state machines in this way as well is that the idea that having something that is very strict underneath it can actually help produce very good quality code. And so it is like we were talking earlier about the problem with those no-code tools is the fact that a lot of the time they produce junk. But if you do have something that is based on those very strict rules, it will help people who don't know very much still produce things that are very high quality. And that's one of the things I also worry about with accessibility is, well, yeah, if you don't understand what you're building, it's very easy to build something that isn't accessible. And so if we're providing these tools that can help people build things that are high quality, that's a game changer.
Yeah, that's so well said. And, you know, this is such an exciting time to be alive. Like, I've said this like several times this month and several times this week. I'm serious. Like, it really is. I'm seeing some great products from TLDraw and Excaladroth, and they're doing some really cool things, especially, you know, with AI, without AI, just like, whoa, you know, just really leveling up that experience of collaboration, really, because this is really all about collaboration. Like, that's what this all is, right? Especially what you were doing with Stately and State Machine as a Service. Like, how do we all get on the same page in an easier way? And how do we all collaborate and better serve our users? And so it's just tremendously exciting stuff. And so
I have
to ask an obligatory testing question, which is like, how do we use XState and Stately to better improve our testing infrastructure, our tests, unit tests, integration tests, especially end-to-end tests? I'm curious, like, how do we solve that problem? Because that's a very unsolved, it's not a fully solved problem, I should say, you know?
Well, I'm very glad you asked, because one of the things that's really useful about state machines is using model-based testing. And so you can test against the paths that you have set out in your state machine. And one of the features that we added fairly recently to Stately Studio is that you can generate test paths now based upon your models. So you can decide whether you want to generate all the possible paths or whether you just want to have your happy paths. Mm-hmm. And it will actually also generate the code for that to help you get started implementing it. I think right now we also support, I think it's Playwright for implementation, but we also just sort of give you a rough way of working through all of those paths that you can use with any of the testing frameworks as well.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So what's been feedback in the wild, I think, both on this model-based testing as well as just in general, like with all the release of the stuff that you've been launching at Stately, like what are customers saying and how is this helping them?
Well, I think folks are generally quite new to model-based testing. And I think it is really valuable in providing the comparing things to how people are going to actually use things day to day. So kind of testing the right things, really. And honestly, this feature is so new and not particularly publicized yet, because we've been really focusing on a lot of bigger features that I'm not sure that many folks are using it. So, hey, if you're listening to this right now, go try it out. Tell me what you think. I'd love to know.
Yeah. The first time I've heard about it as well. So I was just like, very cool. I know David especially is like kind of a quality nerd, right? Like hence like working on something like Stage Machine. And so
absolutely,
even when I say quality, it's not so much like QA in the what developers think of. It's more actual quality and robustness and like predictability of your applications, right? Because like that's the thing, like you don't want unpredictable behavior. Like even if we get into an error state, you want to have controlled that error state. Like it's that error state because you directed the code that way and it's doing what you want it to do when it errors, right? And so like that's just really fantastic. Like I think if you guys get that piece of the puzzle, then it really just kind of closes the loop on quality.
It's what State Machines is all about, is really that predictability and being able to have that control. I think that's really the benefit of it. And a lot of these other features that we're providing are kind of just nice side effects that come as a result of having that level of predictability and control.
So I'm looking at your website and it's like features, design, build, deploy, understand. Deploy and understand are the two things that I think I'm less like mentally familiar with. So can you walk us through, you know, obviously what that deployment flow looks like for folks that are using Stately?
Yeah, absolutely. So this was one of the features that I demoed in my NodeConf talk the other week. So this was a fun opportunity for me to get playing with this. And it's now that you can deploy your state machines as live actors. And what that does is you literally just hit a button, grab yourself an API key and a URL for your actor, and you can then, it deploys it on Cloudflare using EdgeWorkers via PartyKit, which I'm pretty sure you probably have heard of before.
Sunil's been on our show where I'm going to get bleeped out, but PartyKit's the hot in town, so yes.
Yeah, so uses PartyKit, we worked with PartyKit to create this ability to deploy your live actors. So I guess you could think of them as workflows at this point as well. So that gives you the ability to have them running live. So you have a state machine that you can interact with that is live there already. And also because of PartyKit, it enables you to have multiplayer in there too. So the demo that I did at NodeConf was quite a silly thing. It started out as, I've been doing a lot of demos with white noise machines lately. I'm obsessed with them because my dog likes white noise machines. And I was trying to build like a fun little interactive demo where you do that. And my demo that I did at NodeConf made use of having these live actors, or one live actor, really. And what it enabled was we could have this fun little state machine where everyone has their own state that they're interacting with that enabled me to play a nice sound and have a nice colored background of the app. And all the sounds were played by everyone's devices separately. So it generated a random sound. So it kind of had this cool tonal effect that everyone around the room was listening to this lovely soothing sound. But shared on all of our screens using the multiplayer aspect, I had these little stars. So every time someone joined or someone left, they were represented by a little star in a little like nightscape situation. And it was just a very simple demo to show, hey, you can have things that are individual state that's individual to the user, but you can also have shared states, shared sessions as well.
Oh, what a time to be alive. That's all I have to say. No, honestly, it's just fantastic. It's also fantastic to see how PartyKit and Stately are like playing off of each other as well and collaborating in this space to supercharge, I think, both experiences. Like, I think you're giving PartyKit like this real world, very applicable use case for like why you would want to have like multiplayer, and then, you know, state like, and then obviously PartyKit is giving you the infrastructure to be able to do that, right? So like, it's just, it's really fantastic.
Yeah, and it's nice because, yeah, PartyKit is really well made and really, like, it's easy to use as it is. But really, in order to deploy a state machine from Stately, you don't actually have to touch any code at all. And it's just the point where you want to implement it, where you can pull in the URL to get the state machine. But then you would interact with it the same way as you would do any other state machine. You can send events to it and use that to orchestrate your state. So you don't have to, you really don't have to know very much in order to get it going.
Yeah, and that's just what developers want, right? Like minimal knowledge, maximal impact. Like that's our motto, software engineers, especially writing JavaScript.
But also knowing that stuff is not going to fall to pieces behind the scenes because you don't know exactly how it works as well.
No, absolutely. So how do you handle versioning? And I'm also curious, like for this deployed state machine, like if somebody like edits something on the deployed version and then publishes a new version and I'm running an app in production, like do I just, does my stuff just grind to a halt? Like, I'm just wondering, like, what's the control flow here?
Yeah, so right now we're working on a GitHub sync so that you can have the exported version of your machine in your code. But for the live machines and for Stately in general, we've actually got version history, so you can have as many versions as you like and you can sync them up. And the version that you deploy is kept there at that version. And so if you create a new version, you'll need to deploy your actor again. So you're not just going to suddenly break all of your code in production.
Mm-hmm. And then it would require like a code update in your application to like pull in the new version, right?
Yeah, you'd pull in the new URL for the live actor that's been generated. Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like this like unhashed URL that's just like pull from, get the latest, like no matter what the latest is, like there is like a hard version.
No, that's pretty scary. Yeah.
I know. That's what I was wondering. I mean, I'm just thinking of worst case scenarios. So.
Yeah, no, totally. It's good to think of these. And this is like a feature that is really early on. What we're hoping is that we're going to continue building more and more of XState's features into the studio itself so that you can do more and more without having to write it as code. And all of that will be reflected in what you can do with these live actors as well. Mm. So it's all, the live actors work all with XState V5. And so you get all of the benefit of those features. But we're going to keep building more and more in so that they become more capable too.
Mm. Makes sense.
I was chuckling because I was just thinking, forget AI, like Stately's coming to take my job.
They took our job!
In a good way, because... Yeah, having that and having the ability to easily roll back and to just have it deployed in a really nice, easy way is that's awesome. And I'm excited to see where that grows. So like kind of going into the understand part of that, is that kind of where that fits in? Is like having it all hosted there means that you can have like documentation around it, or that it can use it to generate documentation? Like, how does that work?
So that's totally, so the understand part that's on the landing page is really focused around, yeah, you can use it as your source of truth and you can use it to generate state machines, things like that. One of the values of having all of this is that you can use it for documentation as well. So having it as a source of truth is really valuable, but it means that you can also do things like, hey, imagine in the future if you had a PR and pull request, and when it was updated, it had a little picture of how that state machine has changed. So you visually get an idea of, oh, this is how it's changed. You can do things like, you can generate documentation from it. So right now we have formats where you can export it as Markdown. If you wanted to have a list of requirements, you can export it as stories. If you want to use it for like more of your experience design and for the test paths, you can export it as that as well. And we have things like, oh, you want to summarize what's going on in the whole of your app logic. Another one of the little AI features that we added recently is you can just generate a summary of your state machine and it explains what the whole of it does.
That's my executive summary right there. It's like,
yeah.
It's the thing you share with your manager's manager, you know?
Yeah, well, and one of the...
Or your release notes, to be honest with you.
Totally great for release notes. One of the accessibility things that I find really useful about it is a lot of the time I'm producing stuff that has images of state machines in, and writing alt text, alternative text for those images is a nightmare because you're trying to regurgitate what is a really big, complex web of things potentially into some text. And now I just have a button that does it for me.
That's incredibly cool. I mean, for me, it's just like, I love this. First of all, like especially for folks who've never used XState or who are not familiar with state machines or who are maybe familiar with state machines but have never used it, like the syntax or whatever, right? Like being able to actually just like explain your description, like what do you want the thing to do? And then being able to actually have like a decent working prototype of a state machine and being able to play around with it. Like it feels like we've kind of just like really smoothed out the on-ramp
right,
for everyone. Yeah. And I hope people use it that way. Like, I hope they use the kind of the AI to help with like figuring out how this works, learning the API, right? Like it's a teaching tool just as much as it is like, actually like a getting stuff done tool, I feel, you know? Mm-hmm.
Plus that visualizer will also come in very handy. you know, a year from now when you have to go back and revisit that logic.
Oh my God. Tell me about
100%. Well, that's it. If anyone who's listening has used XState before but hasn't actually ever visualized their state machines, I would really recommend you try importing your state machine into the studio. You can import it from a GitHub file as well, or from a repository. If you can't remember where your machine is stored, it'll do that for you too. You don't have to remember the exact section of code. And yeah, then you can look at your work in a completely different way. And I do think it gives you a different kind of level of understanding.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And this is probably a good time to talk about usage. So there is a community plan and a pro plan and then the team plan and then the dun 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 enterprise plan. That's where you talk to somebody, work out a price, you know, negotiations are made behind closed doors. But can you tell us about the community plan, which I think is probably the most applicable to folks and as well as like the pro and team plans?
Yeah, so we actually very recently updated these plans so that it's not like a seat-based situation anymore. And so the community plan is free and will always be free to everyone. And you can import and visualize and build as many state machines as you want for free. And you can save them as public projects. You can share them with people. You can embed them in iframes. You can export them. Like, we don't block any of that stuff. And you can do that all for free. The pro features enable you to do some other cool things like exporting to additional formats like Markdown and being able to have version history, colors. So this is something I didn't mention earlier that really appeals to me because I went to art school, is that you can add colors to your states and your transitions, which you can use it to like, oh, I want to maybe color the happy path, or I want to highlight a particular area, or I just want to make it look pretty. And it's all of those things that help bring in outsiders as well who might not be familiar with like building your app logic in this way. You can use it to say, hey, look, this looks nice and friendly and colorful and appealing to you. And so colors are great for that. And the Teams allows you to have shared projects. You can have viewer-only roles and things like that. And you can invite people to share your projects. On the pro plan as well, you have private machines and unlisted machines. So you can share them with folks without sharing them with everyone. And yeah, enterprise is all the usual good enterprise stuff.
Yeah, SSO and audit logs and yeah, all the things you want like when you're big enterprise. That makes sense. And more things, obviously.
The community plan, it's the same with XState, will always be free as well, and it will always be free and open. So everything that you can build there will be completely interoperable, and you don't need to worry about any lock-in. Like, Stately might be a business, but it doesn't mean they're trying to lock your code away from everyone else as well.
That's dope. Yeah, no, that's really fantastic. Like I said, I mean, I love this tool. I'm really, like, you know, sometimes you see like yet another SaaS company getting created and you're like, really, you know, but like, this is one where I'm just like, it's just like, yes, you know, because I'm like, yes, like we need more companies using this for state management. We need like more of this, please, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, not speaking about myself, but about the Stately's just a really tiny team. There's only 9 of us right now. And it is some of the smartest people not just smartest, but also kindest people I've ever worked with, which I think, as you know, working in tech, not always a given. And it is really smart people who care about building good things that people really want to use. And I think that's one of the benefits of Stately, and I hope it comes through. Like, they're really speedy. The amount they produce, like, for such a small team in such a short period of time is amazing. But also the fact that they actually do it with the right principles behind it. So they want to help you ship robust application logic and not just produce a load of junk code.
Yeah. No junk. No junk. Just no junk, no fluff, just stuff, right? So no, that's super cool. And so David is very sweet, very kind, and he's actually extra kind to me because back in the day I talked to David about, oh my God, you're such a good piano player. Like, we should do a collab because I like singing. I'm not good at it, but I do enjoy it. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if David Piano and I did Tiny Dancer, I think?
Is it Tiny Dancer? Yeah, Tiny Piano.
The Elton John song?
Yes, the Tiny Dancer, yes.
Yeah.
Because he had a tiny piano behind him, and I think we were talking about the tiny piano, and I was like, let's do Tiny Dancer. And he's like, let's do it. I'll send you my piano recording, and you could sing over it. And so, David, if you're listening, I have not forgotten about that. You know, it'll happen someday. Maybe someday in 2024, we'll do our collab remotely. But I'm so glad to hear you're enjoying yourself. I'm so glad to hear the team's doing well. Thank you so much for telling us about all this really cool stuff. I don't know, Nick, is there anything else we want to ask Laura about? I'm not supposed to give you last word anymore because you took us on a really bad tangent last time.
Well, I do have a tangent, but it's a really good tangent, I think.
Okay, fine.
Go on then.
And it's not really a tangent. I was just going to say, while you were talking, Amel, I was mostly paying attention, but I also...
forgiven. It's fine.
Well, it depends what he says next.
Right, that's true.
I better just stop there. No. I happened to log into Stately Studio, and I just imported the JS Danger quiz game into it. Because if you don't know, that Jeopardy-style game that we play on Changelog, on JS Party, is all written with XState backing it. So I imported the machine in there just to visualize it. And this is really cool.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yes. Yeah. I'll take a screenshot.
That's so cool, Nick. That was a good last word. You've redeemed yourself, really, because last week we were talking to Yuna Kravitz, who's an amazing human being, web ambassador, queen, king of the web. She was schooling us on all things CSS, and then this dude has the guts to talk to me about Tailwind, and I'm just like, no, Nick. This is a show about the web platform, okay?
So, Laura, your thoughts on Tailwind?
Yeah, no.
Oh, no. Do not get me started.
Thank you, Laura. I knew there was a reason why I liked you, okay? So, Nick, you know, you've redeemed yourself. Good job. Now it's going to be your job to put that link in the show notes, okay?
Absolutely.
You make that happen so people can see it. And again, Laura, thank you for talking to us. David, you're listening. We're going to hopefully have you back, 6 to 8 months, and you'll tell us about all the new things. And I just want to say, thanks for being awesome. Everyone go to NodeConf next year. Let's see, what else? I don't know. Nick Nisi for TypeScript president. I'm just kidding. No. I think that's it. So where can folks connect with you online, and how can they follow your work?
You can find everything Stately at Stately AI on all the various platforms. It's stately.ai. And you can find me, Laura Kalbag. I am the only one. Very easy to find. Very SEO friendly. And nice. You can find me everywhere at Laura Kalbag.
You're that's the only unique Laura, you know? That's awesome.
Yeah. You got to combine an English first name with an Indian surname. It's a guarantee you'll be pretty unique.
Right. I think I had a missed opportunity of introducing you as Laura Kalbag, who's the English person. What was it? The non-EU citizen or something like that. I think that was what I was.
Yeah. Laura Kalbag. She's so sad. She's no longer an EU citizen.
Yes, exactly. She's so sad that she left England to go move to an EU country, you know, Ireland. So.
Yeah, one more year. I'll get my EU citizenship back.
That's awesome. All right, everyone. So that's our show for this week, everyone. Cheers. Take care. Bye.
Changelog plus people, stick around for 7 bonus minutes at the end of this episode. If our membership program is news to you, check it out at changelog.com/++. Ditch the ads. Get closer to that cool Changelog medal with bonuses and extended episodes like this one. And directly support our work with your hard-earned cash or your employer's cash, if you have access to a personal development fund or continuing education fund. That works too. Once again, changelog.com/++.
Changelog plus plus. It's better.
Thanks to our partners, Fastly.com, Fly.io, and TypeSense.org. And to our beat freak in residence, Breakmaster Cylinder. Next up on the pod, Amel and I sit down with Greg Tavares to learn all about WebGL and the new WebGPU APIs. Stay tuned right here. We'll have that episode ready for you next week.